22nd lecture of the 17th ACC, and this is March the 27th, 1957. And this lecture concerns no vast, important material, but does concern extroversion, introversion. In its relationship to havingness. And the primary button of denial. The number of tests which have been carried out in the past many weeks concerning extroversion and introversion have resulted in this one interesting datum. That many of the phenomena, many of the stunts, many of the activities of an aberrated being are all classified under attempts to introvert the other person. Attempts to introvert another. We saw a shadow of this back in 52 when I wrote a pad and talked about fear merchants. The point is that introversion is caused by many tricks, many various computations add up to simply an attempt to introvert. I'll give you an example of one of these. Have you called home lately? How do you know something hasn't happened? Now, that would be a very mild one, rather overt thing. I had a caller this afternoon who pulled an introversion trick, almost knowingly. A policeman has been over to my place a couple of times lately inquiring about things. Supposed to alert, you see, at that point. We find out that the occupancy permit has not been posted at that building. See? I mean, the person takes this datum and attempts to put it in a form that will cause the other person to look into himself or look at the backtrack or search a non-existent environment for a clue as to what is wrong, and it denies him havingness. Now, regardless of any other aspect of introversion, the important one is that it denies the other person havingness and communication. Introversion denies havingness and communication. What is introversion? It is the denial of havingness in communication. It makes a person look inward and thereby denies him the material or communication targets which are outward. It's as simple as that. That is introversion. Fellow hits you with a fist, your attention goes on to your cheek, the fist, and inside in stopping the wave of pain. That is forceful introversion. Now, when we look over with great care an engram, we will discover there is a moment when the room is obliterated in such a blow. If we ran the engram straightly of such a blow, we would discover there is a moment when the room is obliterated. And as we run it, we find the room is recovered. The moment of obliteration is run out if the engram is perfectly run. This can be merely a look in, but it could go down to a look not at all, which we know as unconsciousness. And unconsciousness simply is absence of environment. apparent absence of environment. So we have a brand new definition for unconsciousness. The Scientologists working with this will be discovered that this definition is superior to other definitions. Unconsciousness is an absence of environment. That is a processing definition. That is not a very technical something or other definition. If you process against that definition, however, you will discover at once what a black eye is. And I can tell you, articulate it in just so many words and with great precision, what a black eye is. It is a person who has been sufficiently introverted to cause a continuance of introversion and thus a continuance of denied environment. In other words, the introversions have been so many, the actual incidents of violence introverting him one way or the other, with all of their locks, concatenate, add up, and become a chronic introversion where the entire environment is denied. One does not then see that. Now, all you'd have to do would be to stick a free clear in a moment of extreme introversion. That is to say, make that instant moment, those few minutes of being inside, unconscious, you know, of the environment, perpetuate, and you would discover that you had in your hand a case that can see nothing, that is invisible, that is sleepy, that is has a black field. Man goes to sleep at night because he cannot, he thinks, have a night environment. Light is the giver of havingness. If you look around this room right now, you will discover something quite important to you. It may alarm you at first, but you'll get used to the idea. What would this room be like? Now, look around it now. What would it be like with absolutely no light in it at all? Not a glow, thing. Not a glimmer. What would it be like? Still have mass, wouldn't it? Still have space, wouldn't it? But it would not be visible, would it? Can you imagine that circumstance? All right. What would this universe be like with no light in it at all? Phenomenon of sight entirely missing. What would it be like? But it would still be there. Its mass would still be there, wouldn't it? Yet, the creature that becomes totally dependent on light and probably goes downscale until when he sees the light, he spins round and round it and then drops into the bowl and fries insects. They see light, and light is totally directive to them. There are drivers on the road that if light strikes them in a certain way, they just fixate right there. They just turn their car and run straight into your car. An extreme circumstance for a human being, but it's very common in the insect world. And where human beings are living in the insect world is very common. But this is the phenomenon of light evaluating for you. Light will tell you whether or not there is a wall there or not. Thus, light is confused and symbolized as knowledge, confused with knowledge and so on. There are many other perceptions to tell one a wall is there. The bat has developed one. He doesn't depend on light at all. He probably long since got over that dependency. He depends on supersonic sound, something very few other creatures do. And the squeak squeak of a bat is quite remarkable in that it's a sonar, the erroneously called radar, which is an electrical impulse, but it's a high-pitched sound impulse which bounces off the walls and being received by him tells him the exact distance he is from walls. And it's quite interesting to see a bat, who cannot see, flying around in a room and going just so close to an object and then cheering off. He does not see the object, but he does not hit it. And he can fly a swift, fantastically swift pattern, a flight through a cave or room without hitting them at all. To him, it would be possible to live in a totally black universe. But he'd have another sound type, emanation, which would bounce off of things and which would tell him and locate him. Sound, supersonic sound is evaluating for a bat. For a human being, light is evaluating. And an individual gets this thing called light mixed up with havingness. When the lights are on, he can have, and when they're off, he can't. Thus, the habit of sleep. There is nothing more significant about sleep than this. I mean, it's not any further a phenomenon at all. During the night hours, a person cannot have, so he sleeps. And the body, accustomed to this from the earliest plankton, algae, and so forth, believes when the sun goes down, it should sleep. In these electric lighted times, we have an entirely different idea, and many people have the idea when the sun comes up, that's too much light, and then's when you should go to sleep. It's reversed, maybe. Now, where a person does not have his environment, some portion of Anatem is his lot. He just got fixed that way. He thinks he needs the environment to reawake. And he has a lot of intricate considerations. And these intricate considerations, not necessarily true, but they're all held in common, add up to the fact that when the lights go out, so does he. We get a denial of having it. Now, with this mechanism of no have, we can understand introversion a great deal better. Now, instead of turning off the lights, what we do is make the fellow look inward. We use a thousand tricks. We make him look inward. Don't let him look at the wall. Make him look inside his skull. Study the brain. Say the brain is the end all of this and that. That's one of the cornier tricks by which this is done. I doubt if a brain ever did anything but absorb maybe a little shock. Probably its total purpose. It's interesting to look at, but it's not even good to eat. I don't particularly care for brain. Old native chief down in the Solomons one time served me up the most beautifully scrambled mess of human brains on a banana peel and so forth. And he was a good host, but I wasn't a good guest. I mean, I just didn't care for it. It's an idiosyncrasy of mine. That's true. But we make people look inward. And we achieve the same thing and the earlier phenomenon than light. This is older than light, this introversion. Light is a Johnny-come-lately as a denier of having it. Somebody dreamed up the necessity to have light so they could see. Before they did that, they merely saw. All right, let's look over this introversion mechanism as a method of denying havingness to somebody. Now, when we look over the tone scale, we find from top down to bottom, we have a dwindling scale of havingness, a dwindling amount, a dwindling ability, a dwindling willingness, rather, to have. And as that willingness to have goes down, so goes down the tone scale. We have then from 40 down to way sub-zero, we have the note of mystery scale. Mystery is normally black. Well, mystery is simply a total introversion. What is there? We don't know what is there. There is no way of finding out what is there. But something is there, and we don't know what is there. And if we look inward, why, we may find something new that is there. That's the way it goes. Now, if you match this with the dwindling scale of effect, the less a person has, the less he can afford to lose, in view of the fact that Axiom 10 tells him that too many effects cause him to lose. If he receives an effect, he's liable to lose something. We get a reaction of no effect every time we try to make an effect on somebody. All effects are bad. So we get as the scale goes down, we get the person's idea at lower and lower levels that effects are worse and worse. He gets a heightened idea of the value of an effect. And when he gets down the lower range, he's very hard to process. But all you have to do is process him on something that gives him an acceptable effect. We've already talked about that. An acceptable effect. Well, when he gets down to these lower ranges, he is already at a level where his can't have is so great that anything which is pushed into his vicinity, he will seek to destroy. He will dramatize his own can't have, in other words. He will dramatize his own introversion. He will dramatize his own darkness. He will say it isn't, which is unreality. Unreality is just somebody saying it isn't. He will dramatize the thing by destroying any object put near him. In other words, he resists and resents having it. And it's the one thing that will pick him out of it, because it's the leader into isness. Addingness goes well upscale, and itself has various phenomena and manifestations, such as confront, contribute, and create. But by the time we get up around contribute and create, we are up around the concept of isness. An individual gets the pure concept of isness or existence without any further idea of possession or not possession. That becomes about when we go into the lower game. Now, Axiom 10 is the author of this game called introversion extroversion. It all more or less stems from Axiom 10. Highest words, the universe, creation, and effect. So we have below isness, where we have this taking place, that individuals try to create effects on other people. Well, the majority effect would be introversion, total effect. You cannot kill a Satan, but you could totally introvert him so that he never would look out again. That is the goal of most people who are working at this game. Yeah, well, that's a pretty hard trick. I mean, that really takes some figuring, really takes some computation. You can take any 1,000 Dianetic or Scientology phenomena, almost at random, and find out that the majority of them are simply mechanisms of introversion. And you take all of our processes, we find those that work are mechanisms of extroversion. So the processes that are there actually merely counter this thing called introversion. We can take over the automaticity of introversion, very interestingly, by keeping things from going away and holding things still and so forth. But it's much more effective and quite real in our processing that all we have to do is get somebody well extroverted, and we've done it. Exteriorization is simply a method of extroversion. We have to get a pre-clear so he can reach, so he can communicate. This is very necessary. He's been subjected to so many effects that he is rather totally introverted. Let me give you some of the mechanisms of introversion which you might be interested in. When people exteriorize, they go out into the room and see another room. Well, why? Well, they know all there is that is real is inside a head. Everything that is inside a head is real, but the head itself is the author of any scenery outside the head. And the person who is thoroughly interiorized, introverted as well, introversion is just a little bit different than interiorization, you know. To interiorize something, you merely put it in something else, but to introvert something You cause it to look in upon itself, which is a rather interesting pattern. It makes its own cage. This is the only reliable thing you could do to a Satan, is make him always manufacture, everywhere he is, his own cage. Which is a final answer as far as games are concerned. It's a wonderful answer, everybody has thought, except it doesn't work. The more introverted a person gets, the more dangerous he is, actually. Because he's dangerous to himself and everybody else and no good to anything. The introversion is not a good games mechanism, but it is a goal of games. All right, we get this person who is inside ahead and can't get out and can't exteriorize and so forth. And we examine what he really believes, and he believes that he is in something which is all there is. You see, all there is the inside of the head. And there is no outside of the head. He doesn't believe there's an outside of the head. If he sees something with his eyes, that is because the head is manufacturing the illusion of an environment. That's really what he believes. So if he got out of his head, then he couldn't see anything in the room because there isn't anything there. And he follows this through completely and so gets a misperception the moment that he is asked to exteriorize and look at anything. If he gets out and finds himself misoriented and into a bunch of facsimiles and not looking at the room at all, it's simply because he does not believe the room is there. He is so introverted as a Satan that he cannot look the distance to a room. He feels that the body could look, and he, in an irresponsibility, can read something off the brain, he thinks, that tells him a room is there, but of course this is just a lie. Now that is what a person who is thoroughly interiorized really believes. And when we exteriorize, he can get some very funny perceptions, believe me. These perceptions are totally based on the concept that there's nothing there but a head. Quite amusing. If you have somebody feel his head and then feel the desk and then feel the head and then feel the desk, he'll experience some rather odd changes of mind. I mean, you go on and do this. You're demonstrating to him that the head does have an outside. That the desk does have an outside. That the head exerts a pressure against the fingers. That the desk exerts some pressure against the fingers, which is quite similar to the head exerting pressure against the fingers. I hear it. He doesn't believe there's any outside. He thinks the head is the author of this, and there's no outside to the head. There's only inside. There's one of the more fabulous things. If you have him keep his head from going away for a while, of course, he's liable to blow out of his head, but we don't guarantee that he will see anything. You'd have to keep his head from going away and his knees from going away and something else, some other object maybe. And then you'd have to come right around and do something else. You'd have to keep various objects in the room from going away before he would be willing to perceive any of them. In other words, this person has a lost universe. Not only has the universe become much too real, the universe is now lost. And there's an interiorized case. Now, he is in a head. But something else is going on. There are two problems which run parallel here. No reason for me to assure you of this, but a head is just as much messed as a room. You see, and a room is just as much mess as a head, and if you can have any perception at all of a head, you can certainly perceive a room. This is just not a justified conclusion. Now, there are two things going on. You could put somebody in a cell or a room or a box and darken it completely, and he would experience a no-have. He couldn't have it. It isn't light. He can't experience it, and therefore there's nothing there to have. Of course, it's remediable by process. He'd process somebody up, so he could put him in a black room, and he could have the whole thing, and it'd be masked there. But this is a... darkness is a specialized consideration of light. You already had to accept light as lighting things before you could accept dark as making them unseeable. Quite an amusing stainless thing called life. It's a Johnny-come-lately postulate. Satans are dead scared of it. They're upset about it. Satan's the one that's supposed to emanate, not suns and other things. All right? And the other concept would be to make a fellow look in at himself. Now, in order to do that, an individual would have to build some kind of loops out here which would look back. And he'd get curves around himself, you see, to direct his sight and force back. He'd have to have mechanisms surrounding him so that he threw a mass out that way, the mechanism out there would pick it up and throw it back at him again. See, this is an introversion machine. He wouldn't look outward, he'd look out and back. And that is a special kind of trap. And that's a separate and distinct thing than being in something. Now, you could take a Satan who was looking back at himself in this odd fashion, and then put him in a container, like a box or a room or a head, and you have two mechanisms at work at the same time. And most of the time when we work with subjective pictures, that sort of thing, we're looking at this flow back mechanism. We're looking at those various mechanisms, one kind or another, which make him look at himself, which turn his attention back in on himself. And if we can exhaust a few of those and he can handle them, then he feels better about looking a little further out. But we have another mechanism, see, besides this, and that is the mere fact that he is actually in something, or is almost, he has been in it and no longer can inhabit it and is exteriorized from it against his will and without perception and can't get back in again. That is the lower harmonic of exteriorization. In other words, he's not only not in a head, he can't be in a head. Psychiatry has found that one, by the way, the lowest one. So they have concluded that everybody who's outside his head should get an electric shock. I mean, that's gorgeous. 270 electric shocks were given somebody down in Santa Ana one time. Just because she was frightened to death, she found herself outside of her head in the theater lobby. Told somebody about it, they rushed her to a psychiatrist, and 270 shocks later, some Dianeticist got hold of her and had to process her into some semblance of being. Psychiatrists have heard of this one, although they have never connected it with the spirit or the person or anything else. Most gorgeous job of misobservation and misevaluation of what they were looking at you ever cared to see. But you see, somebody exteriorizing would be very antipathetic to somebody who was running a total dramatization of introversion. They had to be totally antipathetic to those ideas. All right. So we have this matter of two major circumstances regarding a preclear. One, he is keeping himself trapped with his own flows, ridges, facsimiles, flowbacks, mechanism, postulates, and then, while so trapped, is also experiencing some ramification of being in a box or a room or a head. You'll find some preclears are in houses and can't get out of them, and some are in heads and can't get out of them, and some are in towns and can't get out of them, and some are in jobs and can't get out of them. And as the idea is, they want to get out, but they can't. There's nothing wrong with being in somewhere unless you want to get out. That's what is the upsetting thing. You conceive that you're in something, and then your ambition is to get out of it. That's quite amusing, by the way, because all you have to do to get out of it is get in it. You just re-experience or practice getting into it, and the next thing you know, you're no longer in it. You don't get out of things by getting out of them. That's one of the silly things in the universe. You don't get thrown in jail and want to get out of jail and simply walk out the door. I mean, lots of mechanisms like this. You don't join a club and then unjoin. You'll still have some interiorization into the club. So you'll still be a little bit upset by it one way or the other. These two major mechanisms, then, are the mechanisms which an auditor instantly and immediately addresses when he addresses a case. The fellow is in things, And the fellow is creating something for himself to be in, which is to say, he is interiorizing himself in a backflow introversion fashion. These two mechanisms should be clearly understood. The first one is merely enough to pick the fellow up and set him outdoors. You see, you can hand place him with that ease. That sounds idiotic, you know. But he's in a house, and all you had to do would be to pick him up and move him out of the house. Well, that would be the physical aspect. He's in his head. All you would have to do was pick him out of his head. You get the idea. This other one, however, would not really be touched much by that mechanism. Entirely distinct mechanism. And that is to say, he's making an inside for himself to be in. He is introverted. Well, now, how did he get that way? How did he get introverted? What is this mechanism? Well, he was communicating, and somebody stopped him from communicating. Well, that would be the first opening of this. That would be the first blunting of his reach. And let's say he communicates some more, and then there's nothing to communicate to, but he's still trying to communicate to something, and he hits on the happy expedient of communicating with himself. He'll take a communication line or some beam or something and erect it and bring it back around to another mass that he calls himself. He will attempt to communicate with something that isn't there and supplant or substitute with something else and thus be able to communicate on a curve. Now, there is the basic, elementary, early track mechanism. Now, later on, this all gets complicated with the fact that he no longer faces isness. He no longer faces existence and merely calls it existence. He simply says, he is no longer saying it is, and he's saying it is, and qualify, qualify, ramify, ramify, via, 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 cross postulate, trap, don't touch. And he's got all these things, and now he says, have is as close as I can get to isness. Now, he can drift away from have, too, and go below that. But he said possession, ownership, whether the other fellow owns it or I own it, and ownership determines whether or not isness is. And if I own a few things, then I am somebody. And he buys a new house that's 10 times bigger than he needs or something like that, just so he can have enough mass to be somebody. Well, funny part of it is that buying a great big house isn't going to make somebody anybody. But the society has worked out ways and means by which this is to some degree true. If you buy a great big house, why, then you are more than somebody who does not have a great big house. You figure this out, but society has agreements on this. Take money. They have agreement on amount and enough and all that sort of thing. Man's a complete fool and doesn't have enough money. He's just silly. And there's something wrong. He recognizes this. This gag toward a father one time was one of the more introverting mechanisms I run across sometimes. Fellow was complaining to his son on and on and on and on and on about how his son this and his son that and his son something or other. Telling him that he couldn't do this and couldn't do that, and because father was poor, you see, and father didn't have enough money, and father couldn't send him to school, and father couldn't buy him a new pair of skates. And the child turned around on his father with the unanswerable argument, and he says, "What's the matter with you that you're not making more money?" This is one of the deadlier remarks that a child confessed to his parent. Very devastating. It's unanswerable. What is the matter with him that he's not making more money? Well, money is a peculiar thing. It is a via on havingness. Money converts into havingness, and a person can go downstairs from havingness into buyingness. You see, and that's another via. It was quite amazing. A salesman walked in my office this afternoon. He put down this little facet, Swedish calculator, which is a little doll of a calculator, a little portable calculator. And I wrote him a check out, my own account, and handed him the check. He left this beautiful leather bag, And he left this beautiful Swedish steel little calculator sitting on my desk and thanked me very much and walked out with this little tiny thin piece of paper. Oh, yes, you say, but then there are various agreements by which that thin piece of paper is more convertible than a calculator. And this, and yes, it's easier to carry. Anything light is. Its convertibility has very little to do with it. Money won't convert to anything. I put a dollar bill down and said, be a loaf of bread, and it never has. Money isn't converted. It's still money. You find very often puzzles people in financial circles how money will run on one channel all by itself in one complete network without ever associating itself with havingness at all. Then there are people up on the street who will become artists at money. But money no longer is a mechanism which will buy. It is itself. Well, as long as money is convertible into something, we can see a lot of sense in it. But when somebody isn't any longer going to convert money, that is, he's not going to any longer do an exchange with money, and the money is simply the money, and it's just going to pile up as the money just so he can be somebody, because if to be somebody you have to have some money, he's gone silly. That's a silly down step. See, it's equally silly to have only money as a havingness, only money, or not to have enough money. If everybody uses money, that's silly. An unanswerable argument. What's the matter that you haven't got enough money? People down here worrying about inflation. I don't know why we've got inflation at this particular time, unless it is the frantic effort of the populace as a whole to waste enough money to make it valuable again. There must be something moving in the society to make people behave the way they would do about money. There's no real rational way to behave about money. There's merely an agreed-upon number of ways to behave about money. And the only reason I'm talking about money is so you can reinterpret it into havingness. And that is to say, there are many ways you could regard havingness, possession, and so forth. And there are many ramifications of havingness. And there are many reactions to it. And there are many things you could do with it. And now we go one stage up, and now there are many ways you could regard isness or existence. And it, many ways you could regard it. And in this society at this time, it kind of goes that way. It goes isness, have, money. Now the society is on waste money. Interesting level for it to be on. People don't believe you when you tell them, you know, you're not charging enough or something of this sort. That's not true. You have to provide a method of wasting money. For instance, lists of people available by various publications quite often sell many more $100 items than they do $1 items. The list is very good for $100 items, but it's not at all good for $1 items. Well, you could sell them diamond rings for $1, real ones, and sell them cracked glass for $100, and they would buy the cracked glass. You're providing a means of wasting money. It's interesting. It's something for you to know as a Scientologist, because you very often offer your services and you do not make them sufficiently wastable. The person can't waste enough money by acquiring your services here. Some of you say, well, I'll only charge you $5 an hour, and you wonder why the fellow never came back. And if you go into $250 or $500 an hour, you're completely beyond any possibility of acquisition of money, you see. I mean, that's beyond any quantity of money that is there to be had. But if you go into some medium ground and you say, well, my services are $75 an hour, something on this order, you sometimes be very amazed that person right away is yanking out his checkbook and he wants some processing right now, and he's all straight. He's got it now. He knows processing's valuable. And anything's valuable, it costs $75, and something costs $5, it's not valuable. His method of have is how much? How much money is his method of have? It's very baffling up on Wall Street. A lot of fine guys in the world of finance. Terrific numbers of it. There are also a lot of very foolish ones. who never look at the vase, the Rembrandt, on their apartment wall. They look at it as $10,000 worth of pottery, you see, but it's really not of pottery, it's $10,000 worth. One of the more amazing things, you get into one of the suborders of the street, where they're really not the crack operators or something like that, kind of the hangers-on, and this is all they say. They go around the apartment and they say, well, look at that rug, it cost me $5,000. How do you like this picture? It's $15,000 for the picture. And they don't even tell you who it's by. It's a $15,000 picture. You see, it's a how much. Now, have and quantity, you see, is entered into that. So there is postulated the idea that there is enough of any. This idea is understood that if you have a lot of, you have maybe exceeded enough, and if you don't have quite enough of, you are not quite enough, you see. If you have a scarcity, that's not quite enough. If you have too much, that is an excess of enough. And this enough is always understood, which is quite amusing because a preclear in mock-ups always has a very definite idea of how much enough is. He knows how much enough sore throat is. He knows how much enough leg is, or how much enough women, or something. You can ask him some of the most imponderable enoughs, and he always comes up with some kind of an answer. And if he tells you none, it's quite positive. You want to hit those nuns, by the way. When he strikes a nun, you're asking him how much enough is of this and that, and he tells you none is enough of that. You have hit one of his aberration buttons. We know the number of Frankenstein monsters that should be in this room. None. Okay? And if you had a definite reaction that there must be no Frankenstein monsters in this room, I'm afraid it's more than sitting and looking at a motion picture that's wrong with you. You probably have built a few and turned them loose on a few unsuspecting publics. But these quantities, by the way, don't really run too much, too little, and so forth. The guy every time gives you the answer enough, but the amount that is enough varies. His answer is always enough. Now, there isn't enough. There's evidently enough money for any given individual. There is enough coals. You tell me, how many coals you expect to have this next year? I don't know. And so on. Well, ask him the question differently. How many would be enough coals for 1 year? And he'd say, oh, three. There would be no real lag on this at all. It's all built around quantity. Well, when he is surrounded by less than quantity, less than expected quantity, you could say enough is expected quantity, and you have some idea of how much enough is. When you look around, that's not a good translation, but it'll do. When you look around and find less than or more than enough, you could say you're having this trouble. See, having this trouble always comes from more than or less than enough. And enough is answerable. Now, a fellow who tells you he wants to get rid of coals to the end of time, if you really did promise him no coals to the end of time, would have less than enough. And he's liable to be unhappy about the situation. Do you see that? Well, this is quite important because it defines how much introversion there is. Introversion depends on getting less than enough. Now, you can, oddly enough, get an enforced extrovert. An enforced extroversion is quite interesting because that makes a fellow extend when he doesn't want to. And you get that when there's more than enough, or there has to be more than enough. You get obsessed. Obsessive-type creation and other things. But this, in this universe, is not one of the major worries and almost never comes across the auditor's path. All he really gets into is introversion, which always tells us less than enough. This preclear is introverted. He worries a great deal. He thinks a lot. He sits and daydreams. These are all descriptive terms of introversion. For each one of these conditions, it's a less than enough. Now, you could either change his idea of how much enough was, or remedy his happiness. You've got a choice. He either changes his ideas all the way along the track about how much is enough, how much is too little, how much is too much. You change these ideas around and you'll change his havingness ratio or the amount that he has to have, or you simply remedy his havingness. Complex picture, I am afraid, but actually, once you boil it down, you can draw it on a graph. Let's take this piece of paper. Here's a person. He's extended to all parts of this room. See, we call this piece of paper a room. And he's extended to all parts of the room. That is to say, he's comfortably in the room. The room is not antipathetic to him. It feels all right. Not too bad. Now, there he is, right in the middle of the room. All right. Now, something or somebody comes along and yanks his attention down to a fixed point. Well, that's merely a fixation of attention, but it denies him the room to a little bit. In other words, instead of being all around the room and through the room, his attention is over here on only one little section of the room. But he still has something, and he still considers this usual. Now, let's make him fix his attention, and then let's shove his attention straight into him. Make him fix his attention, and then push his attention in on him, too. And you've denied him the room. This much havingness, then, isn't his. He's just there. He has a sensation of existing in emptiness. He has to have his ideas of enough regulate this, and so he's denied having this. Now, I'll give you an example that you could run as a processing test. This is just a test. Something that would be explanatory of this phenomenon of which we speak here. Take somebody who is has a black field and ask them to make a room, not this room, make a room solid or a little more solid on the outside of that field. Well, good night, quiet enough. He has a black field. We tell him to make an imaginary or hypothetical room beyond the confines of that black field solid or more solid. And his black field will vary rather rapidly. In fact, it's one of the fastest ways I know of to vary a black field. Now, what do we use here? He went in. See, he was denied the room. He introverted. He's no longer his attention on the room. And then being denied the room, he then pulled all of his attention in. Now, he could pull it in thoroughly enough so that it'd be black even if the room were lighted. Now, we take the preclear, who is apparently at this stuck point of space where he was totally introverted. There he is, see? There's nothing around here at all. And we tell him to make a room a little more solid all the way around this blackness, right where he's sitting, just as he is. We just suppose out of thin air there's a room. There might be a forest of trees or something else. We don't care what, but we just say a room. We get this back. And this black patch turns into a facsimile. That's one of the more interesting experiments that a Scientologist could conduct. It certainly changes the field. And he very probably get the first facsimile he's ever seen. You've just exactly handled the mechanism of introversion in reverse. You knew he was introverted at a point, and so you extroverted him at that point. Now, you could go further than this. You could run somebody along on the somatic strip. Dianetics do that with great ease. Run him along until he got an anatin area. You know, or something where he was foggy. The somatic strip will go to the first fogginess necessary to resolve your case. Snap. And then when he got there, he would simply say, all right, now make the hypothetical room, we've already agreed with what a hypothetical room would be, more solid on the outskirts of this aniten. And the aniten go, phew. In other words, we put the havingness back wherever it was denied on the track, and so we would get a whole shapely track all over again. In running then and now solid, you can use this trick. Fellow says, I can't get a facsimile. You say, what have you got? I got an invisibility. Fine, make a hypothetical room a little more solid on the outskirts of that visio. All of a sudden, boom. We don't care where he is or what he's doing. You've added havingness there where there was none. And sometimes the exact room or area will show up. You only miss when he was aniten out in an open field or something, surrounded by mountains at the distance or something like that. You understand this mechanism of introversion? You get it a little more closely. Because that is worry, that is anxiety, that is not being able to see, that is this, it is that. Oh, Lord, it's self-invalidation. But I'm not going to sit here and make a list of 1,000 things that introversion is. Tell you how to remedy it, and the preacher will tell you all about them. All right. Now, the other factor involved here is very similar in fascination. How did the fellow get introverted on second hand? How about the fear merchant? How about the fellow who went around and sold fear? Well, you process this on a game's condition. And a fellow is introverted into the times when he failed to introvert somebody else. It's a little more complicated. I've shown you what the mechanism of introversion was, but he's really not introverted that simply. The one that you can audit and that is causing him trouble, he could handle this if it was only himself getting punched in. But he can't handle punching in somebody else or trying to and then not succeeding. So we have a game condition, A and B. A is standing there. He punches in all the anchor points of B. He does something, brother, we don't care what. He says, well, your mother died this morning or something. And half an hour later says, oh, it was a mistake. We don't care what happened. He used some information of one kind or another in order to drive in anchor points. Follow that? Or was he made an introversion take place in somebody else? Now, supposing he came up and told somebody, I've just gotten word that there's a run on your bank and you are wiped out. Poor fellow. And the other fellow says, that's all right, I withdrew my money yesterday. Where does this effort go? Well, it's liable to come back on him. In view of the fact there's darn little affinity connected to such an operation, there's darn little potential space. Affinity is space, remember. When you do things with low affinity, you're going to get low space. So a fellow gets snagged into these patterns he lays down rather easily. It's quite amusing. Bite or bit sort of a situation. Well, what would be the best way to undo this bite or bit thing in a pre-clear? Let's say that we forgive him and we're perfectly willing to process out of him all of the times when he introverted somebody else. Or we were going to remedy his havingness of being introverted, or we were going to let him do it enough so that all the times it was done to him would run out. We don't care how we explain this. But how would we go about this? We would use this, denial of communication. We'd run this out. So we would mock somebody up and not permit him to communicate. Now that would be the most basic statement made of it. There's a more complicated process here, which is even more workable. Remember that ability never changes, but willingness to exert it does. So mock up somebody and reduce his willingness to communicate. Mock up somebody and reduce his willingness to communicate. Mock up somebody and reduce his willingness to communicate is the magic formula. You find your preclear is getting taller and squaring around all the way, if you can do this one at all. It's odd. Let's say your preclear has certain smells he does not like. Well, let's let him understand that in this particular case, communicate smells. Make the other person unwilling to communicate smells. It's the preclear, the A, making B unwilling to communicate smells. You can get some of the fanciest somatics on a preclear you've ever run into on something along this line. You say, mark up somebody and make him unwilling to communicate. This is one of your denial of headingness processes. I've already given you. But this is a fancy wording for it, which is fantastically workable. You can do all sorts of things with this formula. You can say, mock up somebody, you see work is a communication control mechanism. All right? Control is just positive type communication with an intention. Now, you say, mock up somebody and reduce his willingness to work. Mock up somebody and reduce his willingness to work. Mock up somebody and reduce his willingness to work, and you've got the human race. These people who come around and say, you ought to retire. How long does it go before you retire? Don't work too hard. Don't wear yourself out. They're just fear merchants. They're just pushing in your anchor points one way or the other. You run this other one. This process, by the way, isn't too workable. I'm just giving it to you as something that demonstrates something. This work. Reduce his willingness to work. Reduce his willingness to work. He'll get a lot of cognitions on himself and so forth. Reduce his willingness to communicate is more workable than this work one. But he'll come up with all sorts of miscommunications of the subject work, and he'll suddenly discover that he's being prevented from communicating and prevented from controlling people who are not permitting him to work. Social insecurity is run by the government. It's just some kind of a mocked-up mechanism to keep people cut back on the subject of work, somehow or another. They're reducing willingness to work by making one pay too many taxes and so forth, or making it too high a penalty. For instance, I don't know what they're going to do for managers one of these days. I said they were on the society was running on the backs of a few desperate men. I don't know what they're going to do because the second you step into the shoes of management, whether it's General Motors or General Teapot Hash House, the next thing you know, you've got somebody from the tax department and the report department breathing, the license department breathing down the back of your neck, and all of them, and this is what's phenomenal, all of them have halitosis. I'd forgive it if there was just one tax collector who didn't have. You know, but I have never found one. We conducted a very wide survey, and we found they all should be restrained from breathing. 100%. Now, they're reducing willingness to work by penalizing people for working. Because if you manage something, you'd be thrown in jail. If you just work for the organization, you can still complain about it. They're trying to do it by the process of natural selection. They're trying to select out all the people of the society who are willing to work and only leave in those people in the society who aren't willing to work. Here's this game going on, denial of communication. Just a method of communication work is on a rather heavy level. Deny communication. And it is the commonest game played. There are only two crimes. Denial of communication leads us to this other crime. The two crimes are to communicate and to be there. There are only two crimes in this universe. Just two. To be there, communicate. So, denial of there-ness, or denial of being there-ness, would seem to follow as another process that's never been tried. Denial of communication definitely has been tried and is one of the more therapeutic processes. Ranks right up there with then and now solids or heavy high control ARC, high ARC process. These are very valuable processes. I hope you understand this introversion, because once you've understood introversion, you will understand that the mind is simply an introversion mechanism, and that's all there is to understand about it. Thank you.